From Erie to Middletown, Latrobe to Gettysburg, this is the Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, will Santa leave coal or candy in the stockings of our Capitol Watch crew? They're here to talk about their policy wish list for the new Shapiro administration. Carl Marrero, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom have a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And they didn't affect the outcome of the recent election, but undated mail-in ballots could be a factor in 2024. The fight over them continues. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor-elect Josh Shapiro says he will appoint Uri Monson as the state's new budget secretary. Monson currently serves as deputy superintendent for the Philadelphia School District. Previously, Monson served as top financial officer for Montgomery County, this during Shapiro's tenure as chairman of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, and has maintained close ties with the incoming governor. Special Counsel Jack Smith, who has been appointed by U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland to investigate President Donald Trump's role in election challenges in four states, including Pennsylvania, has issued subpoenas to local election officials in those states, demanding any communications with or involving the former president. Media reports confirm Allegheny County in western Pennsylvania has received a subpoena, but other agencies, including the Pennsylvania Department of State, have declined to comment. Smith is tasked with determining whether or not any laws were broken as Trump and his supporters contested election results in those states. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives is deadlocked with 101 Republicans and 101 Democrats and one vacant seat due to the death of State Representative Anthony DeLuca just days before the general election. That seat will determine majority control, and since it is deep blue, the Democratic nominee will be the odds-on favorite to win. Party leaders are scheduled to gather this weekend to select a nominee. At this point, eight individuals have expressed their interest in the position. The Democratic State Party must then approve the selection of the nominee, who will stand in a special election currently scheduled for February. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Well, they've made a policy list and checked it twice, but will Pennsylvania's new governor think our Capitol Watch crew was naughty or nice? Here with a look at key policy issues that will shape the legislative agenda when Governor-elect Josh Shapiro takes office next month are Carl Marrero from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. Carl?
Well, ho, 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 and welcome to this special holiday edition of Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, Carl A. Marrero, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, sitting in for your regular host, David N. Taylor. I'm flanked by my good friends, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
So glad to be here with you, Carl.
And the Honorable Steve Bloom, Vice President at the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thank you for all of your contributions to Capitol Watch.
Happy to be here, Carl.
Well, this week, it's that time of year when we pen our letters to Santa asking him what we want for Christmas. And I thought maybe this would be a good opportunity to take that spirit, get it, like holiday spirit. I mean, I'm going to be all full of all kinds of bad dad jokes and puns today, so just get ready. But we're going to write our wish list to the incoming Shapiro administration for what we want, but also what we don't want for the upcoming legislative season. Is there like a canned laugh or some bells or something that we can do here? It might make it a little more fun. But Steve, let's start with you. Before we get into the heavy stuff, let's share with the listeners maybe a fun or unique tradition that you and your family enjoy at the holidays.
Yes, happy to do that, Carl. So thinking about it, I think probably the coolest and most heartwarming thing that we do is my wife works very hard for about a week baking gingerbread into segments in these molds that when put together with their appropriate amount of sugary glue, turn into little gingerbread houses. And she makes about 12 of these very nice gingerbread houses and then invites the grandkids and the great-great-grandmas and everyone over to do gingerbread house decoration, which always turns out to be an amazing hours-long process of creativity. And really, some fantastic gingerbread houses are made. Beautiful stuff.
I'm not going to lie. We tried – we did one of the we bought one of the kits where you do that, and we've only ever bought one. Because I think at one point the hot glue gun came out.
Oh, no.
They don't recommend
it's
eating
it. It's a lot
that.
Of work. Like she's literally baking for a week to make these forms, these shapes, like the chimneys and the roof pieces and the front door pieces and all this stuff.
That is fun. I am so glad you shared that. And Rebecca, what about your family? What's something unique or fun or just something different that you guys do for the holidays?
Well, by far my favorite tradition is the Christmas tree. I know a lot of people have very well put together, well color coordinated Christmas trees. We have a big mishmash of all kinds of handmade ornaments that I've been collecting all my life. So I have ones that salt dough ornaments that my mom made me when I was, you know, a year or two old. I have an ornament from the year I was born. And all throughout the kids' lifetimes, we've been collecting handmade ornaments over time. So as we get together, turn on the Christmas music to put up the tree, we relive all those memories, you know, as we get out each ornament. We talk about, oh, do you remember when we made this and we got that? That's my favorite time by far, because it's so much fun to just pass on memories from my grandparents and my mom and everything to the kids, and then those memories just go up on the tree every year and come back. So that is by far my favorite thing, is reliving all those Christmas memories with the family.
Well, maybe we should have made this a workforce and supply chain issue, because just getting a Christmas tree this year was such a challenge for our family. I think we went to like six different spots at one point, because we still do the real tree thing. At one spot, they wanted $200 for a tree, so we promptly got back in the car and kept on going.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's been a real issue this year for those of us who do still do the real tree thing. I guess maybe the artificial tree thing is coming down the pipe for our family. We're making these requests, for public policy requests. And are we naughty or are we nice? I think last year I was naughty. I would say that last year all the Wolf administration left me was a lump of coal. But because Governor Wolf unilaterally entered us into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, there wasn't any around to be gifted. So, I mean, I warned you, it's going to get really, really bad. Steve, what's one thing on your list that you hope the Shapiro administration might be bringing to you in the coming year? Maybe one thing that you very much don't want them to bring you.
Well, one thing that was really interesting, Carl, is as during the campaign on several occasions, now Governor-elect Shapiro talked about the Lifeline Scholarship, which is an educational opportunity account for children in the lowest performing 15% of Pennsylvania's public schools. And he talked about it in a fairly positive manner. He seemed to indicate that he was favorable toward it, had some specific parameters he thought that would make it better. But overall, he was clear on the campaign trail that he was interested in that bill. And so we're working right now with the prime sponsors in both the House and Senate to reintroduce the Lifeline Scholarship bill. And my Christmas wish would be that Governor Shapiro, come January, would take a good, honest look at it and perhaps advocate for its passage to help those kids in these schools that are the lowest performing 15% in Pennsylvania, and these kids who really need a lot of hope to overcome the poor educational situation they've been in. So Lifeline Scholarships is my number one request. Things I definitely don't want, something I really don't want on my list. I'm worried about regulatory pressures and the bureaucracy growing. You know, we've fought long and hard against overregulation in Pennsylvania. Sometimes it's been felt like a losing battle. And the one thing I fear the most in really shutting down our economy and slowing things down and making it harder for people across Pennsylvania is regulatory overreach.
Well, Rebecca, what's the big ticket item that you really want? Is it a new bicycle, a hula hoop? I really hope it's not two new front teeth. But the same question for you. What's the one thing on your list that you hope the Shapiro administration might bring you in the coming year and something you wish they don't?
Well, I'll point out, first of all, that all those bicycles, hula hoops, and Christmas trees were on a truck at one point.
Yes, they were.
Yes, they were. So I guess I want to start with the thing I absolutely don't want to see coming back next year, and that is kind of the go-it-alone approach that we've seen the Wolf administration take. And I will point to the bridge tolling initiative, which was a big win for us this year and for the business community and the state in general. The Wolf administration wanted to toll 9 interstate bridges in the state and really pushed that as a sort of go-it-alone thing, didn't do a lot of outreach, pushed it behind the scenes as a public-private partnership, and ultimately failed in court when it was challenged. So I think that go-it-alone approach is something I do not want to see a lot of next year, and I'm really hopeful, especially in infrastructure, things like that, and other things as well. But I really hope that we can work together on some real solutions on important issues moving forward. And one I would sort of put on my wish list is truck parking is a major issue here in the state and across the country. And I know a lot of the listeners, if you're driving down the highways and you see trucks pulled alongside the road on the on-ramps and off-ramps, and that they should not be there. But those truck drivers have to stop there because of their hours of service regulations. At a certain point, they're no longer able to drive legally. They have to take breaks, mandatory breaks. And sometimes they cannot find parking spaces. There's only one parking space for every 11 drivers in the U.S., and we really have to find solutions to that problem. It's a problem that's recognized across the board. We all know it's an issue. It's something that we're going to have to work together to solve, and it's a public sector issue, it's a private sector issue, and it's something that's going to take a lot of cooperation. So that's something I'm hoping the Shapiro administration will take up the leadership look at real solutions to issues like that moving forward.
Well, Steve, I want to come back to you on the go-it-alone approach. You know, the Wolf administration, that seemed to be a reoccurring theme, whether it was the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, whether it was the bridge tolling issue. Early in the administration, there were a number of tax issues that we had regulatory guidance on, or it was published in the bulletins without any kind of consent from the General Assembly. Does that mainly fall on Governor Wolf, or does that fall on some of the appointees that he had as secretaries in those various departments? And how do you think a Shapiro administration could be different?
You know, Governor Wolf came into office not having spent his career in the political arena, which I think was one of those claims that he could legitimately make that helped him get elected. He wasn't a lifelong politician. But the downside of that was he was very new to the whole notion of governing. Governor-elect Shapiro, because of his long experience in government, and although we will have ideological differences, he seems to be and has always struck me as someone who's quite capable and competent. And I suspect that in terms of the actual administration of the executive branch, he and the people that he brings along with him will more than likely run a tighter ship in terms of governance.
Well, you're listening to Capital Watch, and I'm your host, Carl Moreira. Joining me is Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. We're making our Christmas wish list for the Shapiro administration, but also finding that it's not as much about the things that we want to find under the tree, but the things that we don't want. What's the one thing you need and maybe another that you don't from the Shapiro administration?
Well, I Governor Shapiro or Governor-elect Shapiro talked also about continuing to phase out the corporate net income tax or ratchet down the corporate net income tax. That was work that got started last year, very important, very historic, to finally begin pushing Pennsylvania's corporate net income tax down from the 9.99%, which was basically the highest in the country.
He said 4% by 2025
right.
At the chamber annual dinner.
And again, he didn't have to say that. He brought it up and said it that way. I'm very much hoping that, in fact, that happens. First of all, that it doesn't go the other way, that they don't start delaying the phase out or start adding numbers back in there and re-raising the corporate net income tax. But the key is let's keep pushing that phase out and really get it done quickly, because we're still out of sync with other states. For us to really attract the investment and the jobs we need in Pennsylvania, we've got to keep ratcheting that down to the 4% or eventually even lower.
And one of the things that I'm going to give you your what we don't want, and that was that the Wolf administration always tied reductions of the corporate net income tax to a thing called mandatory unitary combined reporting. It sounds super complex, and it is, which is exactly why the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue has no business doing it. It allows the department to extend their reach into the operations of businesses across other jurisdictions, being other states. And there's some states, very blue states, that are actually extending their reach internationally, allowing their state Department of Revenues to get into the books of businesses for their global operations to determine what they think is a legitimate business exchange. Very, very, very slippery slope, very dangerous, and that should not be on the table for the Wolf administration. There's a number of other tax issues too, like things like net operating loss, where Pennsylvania is an outlier, which would be great things to tackle. But Rebecca, round two for you. First, we need to know, is it an angel or a star?
It is a light-up star, just like Steve.
All right, so I'm alone in the advocacy for an angel atop the tree. I get
I'm
it.
I'm not
That's
opposed
fine.
To an angel.
Okay, all right.
I'd go either way.
And now for round two on the policy front, what is one thing you hope to find under the tree, and what is the equivalent of Ralphie's pink nightmare for you?
We all know right. There are lots of industries that have a labor shortage right now across the board. In trucking, we have a driver shortage. We have about 80,000 driver shortage across the country, and that is absolutely the case here in Pennsylvania, too. So that contributes to supply chain issues, and I would like to solve that issue. So I would love to have a conversation about workforce development and how we actually design our workforce development programs to address the industries that are most in need of workers in our state. And I'll give an example of one where I think we really can work together with maybe the incoming Shapiro administration. Some other states have done some training programs in prisons for truck drivers, where they can accomplish most of their training requirements in prison. And then when they get out into the workforce, they go to work for a company and finish things up. I think that would be a fantastic way to sort of solve two issues at the same time, and I'd love to have a conversation about that. So that's one I would offer, is workforce development. As for another issue I really...
What's your pink nightmare?
Pink nightmare, recreational marijuana legalization. That would be a disaster for the industries like trucking that are safety sensitive. All truck drivers have mandatory drug tests. We obviously do not want any truck drivers out on the road who are impaired. 2 years ago, the industry implemented a mandatory drug and alcohol clearinghouse across the country. And after that went into effect, we lost 114,000 CDL drivers
Wow.
in the country. And of those, 86,000 have not returned to the industry. So when we talk about a truck driver shortage, drugs are contributing to that. And obviously, we want these drivers off the road. We do not want them out driving. But at the same time, to the extent we're making drugs available by legalizing recreational marijuana and things like that, it makes the situation even worse. And truck driving is not the only industry where that's an issue.
Well, both of those issues that you bring up ring true across the manufacturing sector as well.
I mean, right.
At any one time in Pennsylvania, there are about 6,000 open manufacturing jobs on shop floors. That's not cumulative. That's just in a snapshot in time. That's the average at any one time. And that's – I mean, really, it's a lot worse than that in reality, because those are – based on posted positions. We're not counting all of those positions that manufacturers aren't posting because, I mean, they're struggling to staff a first shift, let alone a second and a third. They're not even going to try to post the positions for those jobs. And it's a hard cap on growth. You can't fulfill contract obligations. You're not going to seek new contracts if you can't find the employees on those shop floors. So we're right there with you on the workforce development. And also, I mean, on the marijuana legalization, very, very much on the same boat as well, because just because something a state deems something legal does not mean that OSHA standards, insurances, all of those things don't apply anymore. It now just makes it that much more difficult for those business operators to comply with, you know, what the new status quo would be. Well, we're running really short on time. We have a few minutes left. I think we can do one last lightning round. Steve, what's your ask?
Fiscal responsibility. 8 years ago, when the new governor, Tom Wolf, came into office and he proposed his first budget, It included the largest tax increase of any state in the nation, and it included billions in irresponsible spending. Thankfully, the legislature stood up against that and stopped it from happening, but that was a long, hard fight with Governor Wolf, and hopefully Governor-elect Shapiro will see the lessons from that and make sure that the budget he proposes this year for Pennsylvania is fiscally sound.
And Rebecca, your guiding principle.
I would add, I agree absolutely with Steve on that, but I would also add an overall economic development strategy. And I think fiscal responsibility is a part of that. Tax policy, labor, policy, all of those things are part of an overall economic development strategy that we can all get on board with, which will enhance the economy of the state and grow jobs and economic development.
Well, thanks to you, the listener, for being a good sport with us, learning about the important policies that our experts today passionately advocate for and against, and hopefully while they're laughing all the way. I know. That was bad. That was really bad. I'm sorry. No matter what you celebrate during this holiday season, I hope that you enjoy safely, responsibly, and with those that you love and cherish the most. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your work at the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
And Steve, where can the listeners go to learn more about the Commonwealth Foundation and the work that you're doing?
They can stop by commonwealthfoundation.org.
And you can find more about the work of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association at pamanufacturers.org. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, Carl. Dwight D. Eisenhower was in the White House. Billboard debuted its top 100 chart with Ricky Nelson's Poor Little Fool as the number one hit record, and Elvis Presley was inducted into the Army. The year was 1958, and it was the last time voters in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania saw a ballot with open seats for both U.S. Senator and governor. Voters rendered a split decision that year. Democrat David Lawrence was elected governor, and Republican U. Scott was elected to the U.S. Senate. This November, an unexpected blue wave crashed across the state, and Republicans lost both statewide races. In the race for governor, Democratic Attorney General Josh Shapiro routed Trump-endorsed state senator Doug Mastriano by over 14%. He will succeed two-term Governor Tom Wolf, marking the first time since the founding of the Republican Party the governor's office will be held by a Democrat for three consecutive terms. The retirement of U.S. Senator Patrick J. Toomey created a highly competitive race for his seat in the upper chamber. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman emerged from the primary election unscathed, and although he suffered a stroke days before the primary, he was able to post a clear win over famed cardiac surgeon and television host Dr. Mehmet Oz. Oz was another Trump-backed candidate who secured the GOP nomination by less than 1,000 votes. Nationwide, it was the only seat to flip party control in the 2022 election cycle. Decisive wins by both Shapiro and Fetterman have, for the moment, eased the urgency of an ongoing battle over the counting of undated mail-in ballots. No excuse mail-in voting was permitted in Pennsylvania for the first time in 2020 and played a major role in Joe Biden's razor-thin margin of victory over former President Donald Trump, who had carried the state, also by a razor-thin margin, in 2016. When voting by mail, voters must place their ballot in an outer sleeve, which must be sealed, signed, and dated. The law requiring the voter to sign and date the sleeve is crystal clear. Failure to do so results in a so-called naked ballot, which is then invalidated. A significantly higher percentage of Democrat voters have failed to follow instructions. Therefore, more of their votes have not been counted. This has triggered 2 years of legal battles by Democrats seeking to have the courts strike down the requirement. The litigation trail over the validity of undated mail-in ballots is a long and winding road. Adding to the confusion, just days before the recent general election, the acting Secretary of State, the official who administers elections in Pennsylvania, ordered county election bureaus to count such ballots. Reaction from the counties and their method of dealing with undated mail-in ballots varied from county to county, largely depending on which party controlled the local courthouse. The state GOP was successful in getting the issue back before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which ruled undated ballots could not be counted. However, the court also ordered the ballots to be segregated and preserved pending further legal action. The decision to follow the letter of the law was significant, not only because it gave counties clear direction, but the state Supreme Court in recent years has been highly activist and intensely partisan. Democrats hold a majority on the high court and have displayed a propensity to legislate from the bench. It was out of character for them to uphold the clear language of a law, especially one with such potential electoral impact. The Fetterman campaign immediately filed a federal lawsuit claiming the Pennsylvania statute requiring the dating of mail-in ballots is a violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1968, which prohibits, quote, needless technical requirements. Thus, ultimately, a federal court or courts will decide whether the provision is needlessly technical or a necessary step to prevent voter fraud. The number of undated mail-in ballots returned were not a factor in determining the outcome of the 2022 races for U.S. Senator and Governor. However, if history is a guide, the 2024 presidential election in Pennsylvania will be hard-fought and closely decided. It is imperative that the undated issue be finally and conclusively litigated before that balloting begins. Further, the constantly shifting ground rules have had an impact on public confidence in the electoral process. A pre-election survey of business owners and CEOs by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research found nearly 75% lacked confidence that the election would be conducted fairly and that the vote count would be accurate. The requirement to date mail-in ballots is neither needless nor technical. Rather, it is a vitally important step in ensuring the integrity of the electoral process. A final judicial resolution upholding the Pennsylvania law is necessary to begin restoring voter confidence in our electoral process. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRPV-FM in Clearfield, WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, along with WRJV-FM in Breezewood, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.